NBA offseason now in full effect. Hey, welcome to the show, Maggie Gray, Andrew Perloff. Not sure if you saw this late last night, and that is, first of all, the Knicks making a trade, Perloff. They clearly have a type. It is anyone who went to Villanova now gets to play on the Knicks. They added yet another piece from two of the Villanova championship teams. Mikal Bridges is now going to be joining Jalen Brunson, Josh Hart, and Dante DiVincenzo on the Knicks to create this very unusual collection of former college teammates who now all play together.
Yeah, it is an odd team to me because if you throw an OG, like you have five sort of awesome wing players. Like, what are you doing?
Oh, that's the NBA now.
Is it, though? Like, look at the West. Where Minnesota has the big guys. Denver has the big guys. I feel like the missing piece to me was not Mikal Bridges, but they've been coveting him for a long time because they're Villanova, NBA version. They don't scare me, Maggie. I'm not scared of your big, bad Knicks.
All right. You're wearing a 76ers hat. Yeah. I don't know. Everyone's panicking down in Philadelphia. In Boston, they're still got a nice championship hangover, but this team is clearly being set up to try to take out the Boston Celtics. So that was a trade, obviously, with the Brooklyn Nets because that's where Mikal Bridges was playing. So five first-round picks, four of them being unprotected. Boyan Bogdanovich also thrown in, but he'll probably be on the move pretty soon after that. So essentially a crosstown trade. It happens very rarely. The last time was 1983. Mikal Bridges has never been an all-star, but obviously a very good player, sort of all-star fringe player. And they just traded five first-round picks and a pick swap to get him. So the price was steep, that's for sure. Now, that's not the only thing that happened last night. That's the only real players that got moved. There was also a lot of picks being traded back and forth, so it can get a little confusing. We won't get too much in the weeds, but Brooklyn was trading picks back to Houston. Houston is trading picks with Phoenix. Phoenix is trading picks to Houston. It's pretty wild. And what it all sets up for and what it all matters for in terms of what we need to know as sports fans is that Houston now looks like they're in a position to add a star. And who they want to add, depending on who you read, could be either Kevin Durant or maybe Devin Booker.
Well, it's Woj.
Yeah, right.
You're reading. Maybe it's two versions of Woj.
Yeah, it's whatever version of Woj is not short-circuiting currently, as he's a robot who needs to maybe unplug and plug back in, because it was first Kevin Durant was going to be maybe the focal point for Houston, but maybe it could be Devin Booker. Those two things are not even close to being the same. But anyway, it looks like Houston, all things being equal, is now looking for a star.
Yeah, I mean, they sort of got older last year with Fred VanVleet and Dylan Brooks, obviously. I love that team. I mean, love that team.
Yep.
Jalen Green's spectacular. It's amazing. The West just keeps getting more loaded and more loaded. It's like kind of hard to pick, like, what's going to happen here. How do you build a championship team coming out of the West? The Knicks, you're right. Like, the Knicks are right there with the Celtics now. In the West, Houston can add Kevin Durant, and man, they're still looking up at a lot of other teams.
No doubt, but again, this is just the first maybe domino that's going to fall. We don't even know who they're going to add. If they add Devin Booker, maybe you're saying, oh, they're right there. You know, Durant's a little bit older. It's a little bit different. And then the Phoenix of it all. So the Phoenix Suns aspect of this is also very interesting. This is a super team that got formed like 5 minutes ago, and it looks like maybe they're already going to be shuttling guys out and kind of admitting that this didn't work.
Well, they got swept in the first round. I don't think they don't need to admit anything.
Yeah,
we all know.
I mean, they might say, well, all we need is just like some few better role players. They obviously fired their head coach, Frank Vogel, to bring in Mike Budenholzer. So I guess they're kind of potentially waving the white flag on this thing already. So, .. what does that mean? That means there might be a spot on this Phoenix Suns team for who else? LeBron James. If LeBron does want to leave LA, and Amanda just shook her head, yes, more LeBron connections. If LeBron did want to leave the Lakers, which I don't know why he would, they cater to his every whim. They try to tell you they're reading his mind to make moves, that he's not involved in any of this stuff, whatever. But he could look at Phoenix, Perloff, if they're a team that also has maybe shown interest in drafting his son, Bronny.
Yeah, it's funny because how does that get him closer to a title? If you leave L.A., it's got to be to win another ring. And that feels like a tough spot because their roster is very shallow, right? And they don't have a lot of assets to trade for anybody else. So I don't see that happening because LeBron gives himself actually a worse chance of winning there. Unless they somehow keep Durant Booker and Beal and add LeBron. But the scenario isn't exactly that, right? Because of the apron and the hard cap and all that stuff. Like, they're not going to be able to do that.
No, and LeBron has already said, or his representation has said, he's not playing for the league minimum. So,
and
no.
Even, by the way, even LeBron with that, like, they're way old. I mean, they're crazy old. If they have LeBron and KD, this isn't 2012.
Well, somebody alert the Phoenix Suns to that. So, anyway, I don't know. But all we know is that picks went back and forth last night, and it does seem to be setting up for something big for the Houston Rockets. So we'll see if that ends up coming true. You're welcome to weigh in at 855-212-4227 on both the Mikal Bridges trade from the Nets to the Knicks. Does that get the Knicks closer to a title, and how much closer? You are also welcome to weigh in on all these flurry of picks going back and forth. Does this mean Durant's on his way out of Phoenix? Does it mean that Devin Booker's on his way out of Phoenix? Does it mean Durant asked, maybe behind the scenes, to be out of Phoenix? In which case, if you're a Suns fan, you got to be like, what the heck? What is going on?
No, I think the Suns fans know. Nobody's holding on to the idea that this is going to work, are they?
I mean, it just barely. They've had two postseasons together, and last postseason, the whole big three had played like 8 games together. They had no chemistry whatsoever. This year got a little bit better, and I get that they got swept, but I mean, listen, the Lakers just got gentlemen swept, and they're not breaking up the team as far as we know.
I like the move the Suns made last night just to like at least start to position themselves as a team that can do something, because they were pinned into these three players forever as of last year. I think it's already time to look ahead.
Wow. 855-212-4227. All right. In honor of the NBA draft tonight, let's do a little old school, new school.
It's Maggie and Perloff's old school, new school.
NBA draft tonight. Nobody is going to be confusing this draft with one of the greatest of all time. And not shaping up that way, considering the average sports fan can't name 5 people who are in this draft. However, Pearl, today's old school, new school, we are looking back at 2 of the all-time great NBA drafts. Mm-hmm. So who do you have? The old school, which would be the 1984 draft.
The Houston Rockets select Hakeem Olajuwon of the University of Houston. The Chicago Bulls pick Michael Jordan of the University of North Carolina. The Philadelphia 76ers select Charles Barkley of Auburn University.
All right, that's 84 draft. That's old school. Or do you go new school, newish? 2003 NBA draft, which sounded a little like this.
With the first pick in the 2003 NBA draft, the Cleveland Cavaliers select LeBron James. With the third pick in the 2003 NBA draft, the Denver Nuggets select Carmelo Anthony from Syracuse University. With the fifth pick in the 2003 NBA draft, the Miami Heat select Dwayne Wade from Marquette University.
All right, so there you go. Today's old school, new school, Perloff. What was better, the 1984 draft or the 2003 NBA draft? What do you got?
Well, it's not even a fair competition. It's obviously the 1984 draft. Start with the fact that they had 10 rounds back then. 10 rounds of NBA draft. Can you imagine that? They can't fill out 5 picks in this year's draft of viable NBA players. They had 10 darn rounds, Maggie. It's incredible. And they picked so many oddballs because you had to find players somewhere. But obviously, this is... belongs number one on any list of all-time drafts. Michael Jordan, Hakeem, Charles Barkley, and Stockton. We all know the four Hall of Famers. There's never been a draft class like that. They have, basically, they own the record book. They have a million all-star appearances. But some of the other players were good, too. So it wasn't just 4 guys. It's not the deepest draft, but Alvin Robertson was a multi-time all-star, one of the great defensive players, totally psychotic, famous for that. Otis Thorpe was a really good player. Kevin Willis, big body, short arms, Tyrannosaurus Rex, great player for Atlanta. There are a lot of really good players throughout this draft, multiple all-stars. Not a lot of depth, but the best part about this is they drafted Carl Lewis late in the draft, the Olympic star, and Oscar Schmidt was actually the Brazilian I think Brazil's superstar, the international Olympic guy, was drafted by the Nets in the sixth round and unfortunately never played in the NBA, I believe, but was a multi-time gold medalist in the Olympics. Also, Eddie Lee Wilkins. There's some great Ken the Animal Bannister. There's a lot of names. Back then, guys played college basketball, so you could actually see who they were, and you had a much better chance of getting a player who'd be in the NBA. Nowadays, even as in 2003, there's just so much risk. There's no way you're getting European guys and high school guys. There's no way you could compete with the old school.
Okay, well, just because you had some fun names like the Animal and Oscar Schmidt, stuff like that, Carl Lewis, has made it an interesting draft, but I can make an argument for the 2003 draft being the best. Because 15 different players who were drafted in 2003 combined for 26 championships. So not only does the 2003 draft have very top heavy, which of course is the league's all-time leading scorer in LeBron James, and maybe the first or second best player of all time, depending on where you are on the LeBron Jordan thing. You also have Dwayne Wade, maybe one of the more, even now, underrated superstars. Chris Bosh, still underrated. And then depending where you fall on Carmelo Anthony, these are the guys who are really at the top. But we're forgetting all, if you want to go to depth, this is where you can really get some depth here. Can I interest you in a little David West? Can I interest you in a little Mo Williams?
No, thanks.
Can I interest you in a little Luke Walton?
I'm good.
Three-time champion. Can I interest you in a little a guy you love, we all know him, Zaza Pachulia? I'm just saying you had a lot of champions in this draft. Do not sleep on it. Multiple time gold medalists as well.
I was wondering how you got the 20-something championships. And Zaza, I didn't realize he was in that draft. That is not fair. You can't give role players these championships. I mean, I'm sure there's millions of this. I had 10 rounds. There's got to be 100 championships.
Nope. Well, you didn't say it. And I did point it out. So at the top of the draft, of course, you've got, you know, amazing talent with LeBron and Wade and Bosh and Carmelo Anthony. You also have great talent at the top of your 1984 draft. But give me lots of depth here. And my draft only had two rounds to do it, not the 10 rounds like your draft had in 1984.
Oh, my God. First of all, there's so many there are so many good players. I mean, obviously, Sam Perkins was four. I didn't even mention him. Melvin Turpin, huge bust. Leon Wood is an outstanding NBA referee. He went number 10.
Oh, come on.
Leon Wood is awesome. He never makes a bad call.
yeah, right.
I like Leon Wood. He's actually really graded out high. I think he retired. I'm not sure about that. Terrence Stansbury, who was a sick slam dunk contest guy. Do you remember Terrence Stansbury?
That's I know him.
Vern Fleming had a lot. I have so many more viable NBA players than yours. You had to go. Your eighth player was Luke Walton and Zaza Pachulia.
I'm talking about the amount of championships.
You said depth, and you had to give me Zaza?
Well, I'll give you Kendrick Perkins and Leandro Barbosa. I can do this all day. I got definite guys who were winning six-man-of-the-year competitions. You give me your slam dunk, I'd rather have a six-man-of-the-year. Give me somebody who's actually contributing to big time teams.
Why'd you give me Luke Walton when you had Leandro Barbosa? That guy's sick.
Well, I'm giving it to you.
I love that guy.
Well, because Luke Walton won three titles. That's why.
Oh, okay.
That's why.
He was on a team that won three titles.
Well, all right.
Don't forget Boris Diaw, another champion.
Another six man of the year, too, wasn't he?
Great draft pick.
Yep.
2003, people poo poo it like, oh, it cannot hold a candle to 1984. Look closer. Look more closely.
Your argument was like, oh, this guy's underrated, this guy's underrated, this guy's underrated. Nobody's underrating any of the guys in mine because they're Mount Rushmore guys.
Okay,
I got Akeem and Jordan.
Okay, but can I use one of your guys against you?
Please.
Okay, because Michael Jordan, why I think 2003, we're talking about 2003 draft versus the 84 draft, old school, new school here on Maggie and Perloff. We do this all the time. You have already said that you don't think Hakeem Olajuwon's titles are legit. Because if Michael Jordan wasn't playing baseball at the time and he was still playing basketball, you don't think he would have had those titles. And while Hakeem has all of his accolades on his own, the two titles definitely matters because Barkley is also in your draft and he's somebody who has an MVP, yes, but is titleless. So is your list as impressive because Jordan, you yourself don't believe that Hakeem is like a true champion. You say that all the time.
That is complicated. You did use my own words against me, and I hate you for that. Accurate, I have said that. But if I'm going to do an all-time player list, I would put Hakeem over Dwayne Wade. I just would. He was just better. And I mean, obviously Jordan's ahead of LeBron. So your second player is Dwayne Wade. Hakeem's ahead of Dwayne Wade. Barkley's way ahead of Carmelo. Who's your fourth? Chris Bosh.
Bosh is underrated.
Yeah, I mean, Stockton is obviously on any all-time list. Stockton's going to be higher than Bosh. So I think I beat you at top four one by one easily. And again, I think there's some people who don't even think Carmelo is that great.
Carmelo a little overrated. But again, it
he's
depends.
A great scorer.
It depends where you land on him.
Win. Yeah.
You know, because Melo is a great scorer. He gets a lot of respect around the league too.
Very talented player. I mean,
but just was not a winner in college, but not in the pros.
Hakeem is number 13 on ESPN's top 100 list from 2 years ago, and Jordan's number one, and now LeBron's number two. But then it sort of falls apart for you after that.
Well, that's why I've got Chris Kaman. So,
Oh, that was such a bad pick, by the way, Chris Kaman.
Yeah. There you go.
You never want a balding center.
when he's balding coming into the draft.
22, yeah, that was a bad pick. You got to admit, Carl Lewis getting drafted was pretty awesome. Another guy, your friend Rick Carlisle, was drafted that year. A lot of coaches in my draft. If you go 10 rounds.
I got
rounds,
coaches in my draft.
Yeah, who do you got?
Willie Green.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Oh, dude, such a disappointing
player. And Luke
player
Walton
for the
was a coach, too.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, I got tons of coaches, too. I have Matt Doherty, the North Carolina guy. I have a lot of fathers, too. Do you have any fathers in your draft? You got Carmelo.
LeBron James.
LeBron James.
Yeah. His son's about to get drafted either tonight or tomorrow night. I got a good GM for you. I got James Jones.
I have Cecil.
Busy working the phones last night with the Phoenix Suns.
I have someone named Cecil Exum, who is related to Dante Exum. Didn't see that coming, did you? You never thought Dante Exum would get into this conversation.
I didn't think that. There you go. 855-212-4227. Maggie and Perloff. Old school versus new school. 84 versus 03.
Can I say one thing?
I got Kyle Korver, one of the best shooters ever.
I know it didn't win, though.
Can I say one caveat about this? Just in general, old school NBA draft, 1,000 times better than new school NBA draft. And that's just by structure. I mean, the fact that basically everyone stayed in college all 4 years back then, you knew these guys back and forth. You knew everything about the top 15 picks. And I just think nowadays it's more of a crapshoot. So I think old school NBA draft, there was just an energy around the NBA draft that has been lost because it's a much more, I know it's fun for real draft Knicks, but it used to be such a big thing. It was like kind of like the NFL draft. And now it's just very different.
Now, I notice our own executive producer weighing in our chat, youtube.com/InfinitySportsNet, twitch.tv/InfinitySportsNetwork, 96. The 96 draft is an all-time draft as well. Allen Iverson, et cetera. However, is it old school or is it new school?
Because it's like middle-aged.
Exactly. And that doesn't really apply.
Well, I think it should be new school because I think Allen Iverson and Kobe Bryant and Steve Nash are the legends of the new school. So I feel like, yes, maybe you could say they played in the old school, but when we're thinking about historical context, we think of like millennial generation saying, I remember the 96 draft being crazy. Whereas like Perloff for a generation remembers 84 draft.
Right.
So I think that you may have been able to help yourself better if you took the 96.
No.
But I appreciated the effort to say, you know what, we're going to do real new school with a guy who's still playing in the NBA, LeBron James.
Exactly. Like if it's going to be new school, it has to be at least after the year 2000.
That's fair.
Yeah.
But by the way, except for Kobe, I didn't see a lot of titles on that 96 draft. I mean, Ray Allen won.
How many All-Star games on that draft? My gosh.
Yeah,
but that's all draft.
I mean, I would say I agree 96 is the second best draft, but it ain't 84. 84, we just saw a movie, Air, which was basically about the 1984 draft. They sat there, Ben Affleck, in a room and be like, wow, look at all these stars.
96 draft, Kobe, AI, Steve Nash, Ray Allen, Stephon Marbury, Sharif Abdur-Rahim, Marcus Camby. That's guys off the top of my head. I'm not even looking at a list right now.
Yeah.
Like, and that infamous Steve Nash, but I didn't mention him. That infamous picture. Peja Stojakovic. Like, I mean, stars all up and down the draft. Mm. That, to me, is the deepest, best draft by far.
You can have Stephon Marbury. Please, take him. Put him on your Olympic team.
But did they have Travis Outlaw?
No, they don't have Travis Outlaw. No.
Yes, they did. 855-212-4227. All right, so that's your old school, new school for today. The better NBA draft. Perloff's going with 1984. I'm going to go with 2003. EJ split the baby and went with 1996. Way to go. You're welcome to weigh in on this. We have just loads to do, including football, which is finding its way inside this conversation all day. You thought it was a basketball day? It's not. Football and college football, more specifically, the toughest places to play in college football ranked. Did your school make the list? We'll tell you next. It's Maggie and Perloff.
Welcome back to Maggie and Perloff. Old school, new school debate today. 1984 NBA draft versus the 2003 NBA draft. Which was better? 84, famously, Akeem, Jordan, Barkley, Stockton. 2003, LeBron, Carmelo, Dwayne Wade, Chris Bosh. Both great drafts. Did we throw up a poll for that at Maggie and Pearl? We should. And EJ wants to put in 96 then. Do we put all three in there? Or is this,
no.
We gotta, it doesn't matter because 84 is going to win this one so easily because Michael Jordan was in it.
Well, I forgot to mention 2003, Carlos Delfino. So put that all in your pipes and smoke it.
The 2003 is like, oh, yeah, I kind of remember that guy. I had Carl Lewis. Do you know how many gold medals he won?
Yeah, but what did he do in the NBA? Absolutely nothing except a bad national anthem.
I don't even think he never tried out for a team, did he? I don't even know why. Back then, the 80s were awesome because you used to draft like track stars. Like you used to draft anybody because you had 1,000 rounds to play with. Now everybody, for the sake of TV, is why do we only have 2 rounds of NBA? Draft this year. Why don't we go 5 deep?
Yeah, I know. When we think back to what really built the NBA, it was all those extra rounds of the draft where Carl Lewis got, you know, ceremonial pick. I also forgot Zarko Chabarkaba, so yeah. Everybody can just go suck it.
Did he make the league? I have no idea who that
anyway,
is. By the way, you know what? It's funny. This year's draft, is there, how many starters are in this draft? Is it 3? It's
unbelievable.
It's so bad. I was listening to stuff on this year's draft, like, the new school drafts are awful. Just I don't know what's going on.
Last year we had Wembanyama. That was awesome. And he turned out
Brandon
to be
Miller
so
good
that Perloff now has to drive to San Antonio to apologize to Wembanyama in French in person.
I got to tell you, just when you get to number 6 in today's NBA draft, you're getting a role player. That's all it is.
This portion of the show is brought to you by Wesley Financial. Stuck in a timeshare and want out? Contact Wesley Financial Group now and get a free timeshare exit information kit at wesleyfinancialgroup.com. Well, we got to put this sort of underwhelming draft to the back burner because we've got college football disagreements to take care of, and that is EA, the company that makes the new college football video game, put out a list of the top 25 toughest places to play, Pearl. The hardest, home environments. And they're getting a lot of blowback because Kyle Field at Texas A&M was number 1 on the list over Bryant Denny Stadium in Alabama and also over Tiger Stadium at LSU. And I think most people are actually most disturbed by the fact that LSU is not number 1.
Yeah. They're right, number 3. Here's the thing. I think one of the main downsides of Kyle Field and Texas A&M is the Texas A&M football team. So this is
problem.
A little unfair. Like, Jimbo kind of screwed up this whole thing. It's not Kyle Field's fault. That's my only argument to defend Kyle Field. Is if A&M was better on the field, then this home field would really take advantage, which I guess isn't the point.
No, I mean, listen, Kyle Field is... it's a great home environment. You've seen it.
Oh, it's like they do something with acoustics. Andy Staples was on earlier, mentioned it. They close off the stadium, so it's annoyingly loud. Like, and it's not that the fans are cheering any louder.
Right.
It's the way they did the echoes in that. It echoes off kind of like Seattle, I guess, and you can't even hear yourself think for an entire 2 hours watching Texas A&M lose to Alabama.
I wish a college football game was 2 hours. It's
that was
like
the thing,
4.5 hours.
Yeah. That was the thing that Andy mentioned, which is why I was so upset about Texas A&M being number 1 here. Like, besides that one Alabama game in 2001, 2021, I can't remember a game where I felt like Kyle Field won them a game.
Right.
Like, I can point to games where I felt like Penn State won a game because of Beaver Stadium. I can point to games where LSU, where I feel like Death Valley won them a game. Like, and maybe that's just how bad Texas A&M is, but I just feel like if you're going to be the number 1 place, I got to point to multiple iconic wins where I'm like, man, that team went in there and it didn't matter who they were facing, there was no chance they were going to lose because that crowd was too good. And I don't see that with Kyle Field.
We're talking about also real home field advantages here. We talk about this in other sports, especially basketball, with the Denver Nuggets and Salt Lake being above sea level, like Rice Eccles in Utah. That should be the real home field. It's like 4,200 feet above sea level, I believe. So you're talking about real thin air. That should actually be the true home field advantage, no?
Well, they're very nice there, though. That, I don't know if, like, you don't feel intimidated. Because Salt Lake is a very welcoming town. It's, first of all, it's so stunningly gorgeous, that stadium, NBYU Stadium, that you're a little distracted by the beauty. it doesn't feel like Death Valley and LSU to me. Like, it's a little too nice. Does that make sense?
Which fan base do you think has the biggest right to be upset today? Like, because they were either left off the list or some that were just a little too low. Like, Autzen Stadium should be in the top 10, in my opinion. It was 11th on this list at Oregon. That is an incredible home field advantage. Very hard to play.
It's very loud at Oregon.
It's loud. LeBron's wandering around all the time, but I don't know. I went to, again,
They ruined Colorado's season last year. They showed up and they didn't win a game after that.
I saw USC come in there once. One game, I've been there twice, actually. And one game I saw them lose. It is definitely a home field advantage, but it is a big stadium, too, and it's kind of, it goes up pretty high. I don't feel like it is as loud and on top of everybody as some other stadiums.
I think that Notre Dame got left off this list. Pat Boyle is here. He's doing updates for us. Big Notre Dame fan. I'm sorry, they didn't get left off. They're 21 on the list. It's almost like getting left off. I mean, pretty far down. And Nebraska, who has sellout after sellout after sellout, but because the team has not been so relevant, now the fans are getting the shrapnel. Like, they're not providing the home field advantage, when I think the fans might actually be doing their part. It's just the team is not that great.
Right. When Nebraska plays at home, they lose by 20 instead of 40.
that's not helping.
You know, I read the team that I think that really got snubbed here, because this is a team, again, where I feel like I've watched games, they definitely won almost purely because of the crowd. I think Kinnick Stadium in Iowa, being number 20.
Yeah.
That place, I mean, they've beaten Ohio State and Michigan and Penn State, teams that have way more talent. And teams that were coming in undefeated, and all of a sudden they can't play football at Kinnick Stadium. And also, it's a beautiful thing what they do with the child patients at the hospital. And they wave. It's one of the best things that happens in college football. I saw that at 20. I was like, man, I see a lot of great teams going there and have their seasons just go up in smoke because of Kinnick Stadium.
Iowa's crowd is so loud, they disrupt the offense.
That's why they're so bad.
Why they only score 13 points a game.
One stat to defend Texas A&M. Texas A&M 7-1 at home last year, 0-5 on the road. Maybe that's where it is. Because I think we're discounting how awful these teams are on the road. Maybe that's a crazy split. That must be where EA got this from.
Another one, too. I feel like I've seen weird things happen in Corvallis. And Corvallis can be a very big home field advantage. I think someone had called in before to say Wazoo also. Yeah. So
both of those are hard to get to. I think the commute drains a team.
You have to somehow connect through.
Yeah, Pullman is out there.
And our pal Ryan Leaf has talked about that.
Oh, my God. Basically, Washington State is like a gigantic desert before Seattle, and you're driving in the middle of nowhere. I could see those being really big-time home field advantages.
One last one real quick, which came in really low on the list but made the top 25, and someone mentioned in the chat. What about Boise State?
Oh, that place is awesome.
Yeah, blue field, already kind of disorienting.
Wait, did that not make the list?
It's on 24.
Right.
Just made the list. The bottom five on this list, well, EJ mentioned at Kinnick Stadium is 20, then Notre Dame 21, Spartan Stadium 22, Razorback Stadium is 23, Boise State 24, and Mississippi State rounds it out.
Michigan State shouldn't be on that list. They stink.
I didn't understand that either.
They stink, and who have they beaten at home?
I didn't understand that one.
No, Michigan State's kind of intense, though. I mean, it's like...
When? 8 years ago?
I don't know. East Lansing.
I just feel like Ohio State walks in there and just smokes them every year. I know Michigan's had trouble every now and then. I don't know. I don't surprised because they made the list.
You're kind of getting into the team, too. Like, the Ohio State's bringing an NFL team into that stadium.
I would beat Ohio State at Michigan. Like, I mean, at a Kinnick Stadium. That's again, I'm kind of judging off that. Like, I've seen, like, great teams go into Kinnick, and I can't think of a great team that went to Michigan State and like, oh, we lost to an unranked team because we just couldn't figure out the road advantage or whatever, home field advantage.
So that's what's going on in college football. Lots of people upset about this list. Toughest places to play in college football. It was not LSU number one. It was Kyle Field at Texas A&M. Pat, what else is going on today, sir?
Yeah, the big summer blockbuster NBA trade last night. The New York Knicks have acquired Mikal Bridges from their crosstown rival Brooklyn Nets and have sent back a farm of picks along with Bojan Bogdanović, whose $19 million cap hit this upcoming season was the salary chip for this deal. The picks included 4 unprotected first-round picks, a protected 2025 first-rounder via the Bucks, a 2028 unprotected pick swap, which that'll most likely help the Knicks, and a 2025 second-round selection. The Knicks get back Brooklyn's 2026 second-round pick. Then the Nets turned around and almost simultaneously completed a big draft pick exchange trade with the Houston Rockets. The notable ones exchanged: Brooklyn gets their 2025 and 2026 first-round picks back that they initially sent to Phoenix in the Durant deal. The Rockets get the Suns' 2027 first-rounder. So basically, the Nets have stockpiled a nuclear arms base worth of draft picks.
I mean, this is the only way they get better. I don't think superstars are now looking at Brooklyn and being like, we should all team up there. I think that went out the window.
They should just look at whatever Oklahoma City did and said, we're going to do exactly that. Yep, and that looks like what they're doing.
And the Rockets have also accumulated more draft capital to add to a surplus amount that they have as is. Woj making sure to add in that the Rockets have their eyes on both Kevin Durant and Devin Booker, and they are ready to pounce with a nice package for the Suns. Phoenix has made it clear they want to run it back, but in the NBA, a couple of conversations at some summer concerts or some clubs, and you never know.
Yeah. You forgot the Olympics is also happening.
Yes.
Kevin Durant's on that team. Guys love teaming up and planning their future moves when they're all together.
True. The Olympics. Last night, WNBA Commissioner's Cup Championship. Here was the dagger.
Paulson gets a look. What a big night. 23 points, 6 3-point makes.
Lisa Byington, the call on Prime Video. Bridget Carlton with a team by 23 points. The Minnesota Lynx take down the New York Liberty at UBS Arena in Long Island, 94-89, winning their first Commissioner's Cup in the four-year history of the tourney. Nafisa Collier named MVP. She had 21 points and 6 boards. So I know Perloff hates the in-season tournaments, but think about it.
I do.
Their salary's not high as is. Each player on the Lynx receives approximately $30,000 in prize money, and Collier gets an additional $5,000 for MVP honors. So it's a big deal in terms of the money.
I feel like, as a fan, though, I'm being marketed to.
Well, some of them just made like half their salary just by winning that game.
Perloff,
I'm going to be guilted into following this in-season tournament.
I'm not saying
you're saying that the competition is going to be intense because these people have a lot to play for. That's what makes it cool.
Perloff has a trouble being marketed to when he's wearing head-to-toe sports gear today. Like, you've already fallen for the marketing. You're wearing the 76ers hat. This is some other roots of fight. This is something else that you have. I hate to break it to you. You're getting marketed every second, and you're buying the marketing.
Well, I just think that you should be focused on a championship. I like teams that are solely focused on a championship. I understand the salary thing gets in the way of that. But, like, I don't want to see the Lakers, like, wear themselves out in November to win a meaningless tournament. Meaningless. It's right there with the NBA Summer League.
I don't think that wore them out. I think them running into the Nuggets
years
again
old
wore them out.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I don't, and we talked about this in the NBA season. I don't know why you can't enjoy this and then also then enjoy the playoffs. I don't, like, they're different.
I like the
Maui Invitational, and then I love the NCAA tournament. Like, it's not, I don't think, oh man, like, who cares about the Maui Invitational because we're going to wait for March. Like, I watch the games. I like the games. They play hard, and it's fun. It's a different environment.
Do you care about the NBA Summer League tournament?
I've been to the Summer League, so
yeah.
I like the Summer League.
That's purely exhibition.
That's different. That's purely exhibition. Right, and I just want to see what the rookies play. That's a totally different thing. These are the actual players playing.
By the way, just to take this to news that's happening, did you see J.J. Redick is not committing to coaching the Summer League team? Dude, unsolicited advice, I'd coach that team.
Yeah, Fran Fischel for ESPN, he said that was the number one thing he thought that he should do, is coach that Summer League team. Because
coach any team.
You get great, I know, I mean, you need the experience, right? Like, and, like, throw yourself in the fire, that no one cares you win or lose, like, that was surprised when I heard that. I thought he was going to coach them.
Speaking of rookies, NBA draft tonight. We could touch on it more next hour. I know you guys were talking about it, but, you know, these rookies are going to have to learn right away. A team who has great vets can help accelerate that process. Well, one guy who wants that role, even if it means not really ever getting on the floor, John Wall.
I know a lot of these teams have a lot of young guys on the team. They don't have a lot of vets, and I think you need those vets in the locker room. That's what teams are missing. I'm willing to accept any role it is to be on the team. You know what I mean? If it's playing, not playing, being Udonis has a role, anything like that, I just want to be in the NBA jersey again because I know how much the game means to me, how much I still have left.
A Udonis Haslam role. That was on Podcast P, Paul George's podcast. John Wall has not been in the NBA since the 2022-23 season where he was on the Clippers. 33-year-old, clearly misses the game. He's asking for a chance.
Right. I mean, injuries have really taken their toll on John Wall. But Udonis Haslam got to be this emeritus status with Miami because he had won there and also could be like Eric Spoelstra's body man, basically, right?
Yeah, when Jimmy Butler gets out of line, he can basically pull him aside and say, hey, don't fight him, fight me.
He can execute anything that the coach needs done. Is that what we look at with John Wall?
That's the thing I can't figure out. Like, Jonas Haslam's been an OG since he was a rookie. Like, that's just kind of how he's always presented himself. So him playing 20 years and just being an assistant coach by the end makes sense. I mean, John Wall was like a flashy star. Like,
well, also, here's the thing about John Wall. He's like, I'll play or not play. It's like, well, why would I have you on to not play? If you want to be a mentor, I'll just charge you. You know, you can be a consultant. You don't need a uniform for that. You can be part of the team.
He wants an NBA check.
Yeah, clearly. So it's disingenuous from the very beginning.
I think he, I don't know, maybe he thinks he still can play. And maybe that he's just trying to humbly use the guise of that role. I mean, people, we forget quickly how good people were. All-star five straight seasons through 2018 with the Wizards, and then the heel, and then the infection, and tore his Achilles.
Yeah, no, he was former number all of our pick. I get it with John Wall, but, you know, there's also some other things about John. I would not look at him and be like, that's the guy I want in my locker room with a lot of young people.
Yeah, it just doesn't look like a mentor to me. That's not, now maybe like people mature, people change. Yeah. I just feel like, I mean, I've seen how he's moved in the last year, and I'm like, he wants to be a mentor. Like, I don't see that. I don't know.
All right, really quickly, some baseball notables from last night. We know how stacked the NL wildcard race is. Matt Chapman with a pair of RBIs. Giants beat the Cubbies 5-1. We had a dust-up in the first inning in San Diego last night. Nationals catcher Keibert Ruiz and Padres outfielder Jurickson Profar. Profar walked up to the plate. Ruiz apparently had something to say to him. I was trying to look back if there was something that happened in the game from the last night. Off the top of my head, I don't even know if they played on Monday, honestly. But they started jawing with each other immediately. Ruiz kind of was like putting a hand on his shoulder and poking him, pushing and shoving. Bench is clear. Nothing happened. And then 5 innings later, Profar launched a grand slam, and the Padres beat the Nats 9-7. So,
wow.
I saw that Jesse Winkler the night before.
Yeah, was arguing with Padres fans.
Well, a fan.
Yeah,
about,
but he argues with everybody. Right, he's an agitator.
Yeah, that's what he always does. But I don't know what that would have had to do with Profar.
I don't know.
Yeah.
He's having a great season, though.
He's awesome. Yeah.
That's probably the most excitement Padres fans have had all year. That team stinks.
I know. How is this team this bad?
And I went to a game last year, and it was very quiet.
In San Diego.
Yeah, I screamed at Tatis, saying, "You're a bum. You're nothing without the steroids."
Oh wow!
And a bunch of them were like, they like looked at me and like, you know, shocking gasp. I was like, "You got your hard earned money going to these games is getting paid to this guy, and he sucks. And you're mad at me for saying something? I'm not even a Padres fan. Like, have some respect."
Pat's just sitting in the stands, and the Padres doing a New York radio show. Like, he's a bum. He stinks. They don't do that stuff around the country.
I've been to Petco, and Pat's right. They're not an intense crowd at all, but it is beautiful there, though.
It is beautiful.
I love that stadium. It's.
But here's, no one's answering the question, why are they so bad? Because it's not like they have nobody on the roster.
They're kind of like the Clippers of the Major League Baseball.
Oh, that's a good
right?
Comp.
Like, they're kind of just like
Machado, Tatis, all these guys that they paid a bunch of money for.
Like, the pitching staff?
We always think they're going to be a thing, but they're never actually going to be a thing. Just like the Clippers.
That's a shame.
Finally, Shohei Ohtani tied a Dodgers franchise record with an RBI in 9 straight games, led the game off with his NL-leading 24th home run. Dodgers beat the White Sox 4-3. And Maggie, break up your grimace, Mets. Rock Gerrit Cole last night. Mets won to beat the Yankees 9-7.
I know, and the Mets still almost choked it away. But Gerrit Cole, something happened. He just was totally off last night. But that's okay. We have more baseball for you coming up next hour. Coming up next, though, we have a quarterback competition in the NFL. I'm going to be honest, guys. I did not see this one coming. This is not your average quarterback competition. We'll get to that next. It's Maggie Perloff. Welcome back. If you're watching the show, youtube.com/InfinitySportsNet, twitch.tv/InfinitySportsNetwork. Perloff has essentially put like Chekhov's gun on the table here. Eventually, this is going to fire. You want to explain what you have in front of you?
So I'm not sure if the camera can pick this up. I have four boxes of lime jello, 3 cans of chunk light tuna, and a jar of queen olives with pimento. This is going to concoct a lime jello tuna fish lutefisk special that Maggie has to eat on tomorrow's show because of a lost bet in the NBA Western Conference Finals. I had the T-Wolves. She had the Nuggets. It was the semifinals. Yep. This could be gross, but we're going to make it after the show.
Today.
Let me ask you a question. You have to eat this tomorrow. Would you rather watch it being made to know what you're getting into, or would you rather be surprised tomorrow? Which is going to make you less sick?
Nothing is going to make me less sick. And by the way, you're missing a key ingredient here.
Uh-oh, what?
Didn't you have some oysters that I was also supposed to be eating? Not the Rocky Mountain oysters. Those were very hard to find. But instead, these are smoked. Oh, they're in a can?
They're not just in any can. They're in a sardine-like can. So I'm going to give you the choice, Maggie. You have to make it right now. Would you, in lieu of eating Rocky Mountain oysters, which actually sound quite delicious, would you want me to put these smoked oysters, hand-packed in olive oil, in a sardine can, into the lime jello tuna fish concoction?
Well, yeah, and by the way, we know that Rocky Mountain oysters aren't actual oysters. That was the beginning of the bet. It just turns out it's really hard to find Rocky Mountain oysters in this area.
Yes.
It was difficult. We tried. I can still try.
I don't think we can put these
in. I want them separate.
I think the flavor of the smoked oysters combining with lime jello, just the smell of it, you wouldn't even be able to take a bite.
Well, they're all going to combine in my stomach at some point. So what's the difference?
There is a difference. How many bites do we have to do here? EJ, what's the ruling? Do we have anything on record of how much Maggie has to eat?
We never got a record on how much she has to eat. But I think she has to eat it. We make her a plate. She has to eat a considerable amount. Yeah. It has to be to the point where if your young son ate it, and we would say, hey, you didn't eat enough of your food.
No.
Go back.
No.
That's not mean you had to eat it all.
I thought what we were going to do is I have to have one bite for every game it went.
Seven?
Do I have seven bites?
Well, no, because you got to do the second series. So you got to do 12.
I was actually going to say, do I just have to do six? But I wasn't sure. Or four, I guess. I don't know.
Well, no, it's seven. The first round was a seven-game series.
Yeah.
And then the second, the Western Conference Finals, which you double downed on, was a five-game series. So 12 bites, which will probably get to where I want anyway. So that's fine.
I really don't want to do 12 bites. I really don't.
You lost this bet, Maggie.
I'll do seven. But this part of it is still being negotiated. I never said I wouldn't eat everything. I just, this part is still being negotiated. I'll do seven bites for the original seven-game series. Nuggets, T-Wolves.
I think that's fair.
12 bites, dude. You still need me to host the show.
I think,
as the executive producer, you should not want me to take 12 bites.
Yeah, that would be a problem to you. Too sick to continue.
EJ, two bites in, she's done. We don't even need seven bites.
Quickly, save me.
No way she gets to seven.
Mike is in South Carolina. Let's change the subject. But yes, this is all going down tomorrow. Again, youtube.com/InfinitySportsNet. Mike, save me. What's going on?
Save me. Now, this Italian, now I'm starting to salivate like Pavlov's dog, Rolling Stones. Oysters, damn. You know, Maggie, last week I called you, and I heard you, when you were on the fan.
Yeah.
But last week I called you, Mets fan, and when I shook Willie Mays' hand in the parking lot.
I remember.
Okay. Now, college stadiums football. My son went to Cortland.
He was
a wide receiver, okay? SUNY Cortland. He's 29 now. Now, the best college stadium I can think of, I'm 70 years old now, hard to believe, is West Point. How many good coaches cut their teeth at West Point?
You know what?
Mike,
it's a great one, Mike. West Point, I mean, that atmosphere is unmatched, you know?
Yeah. Iconic. Parcells, his first coaching job, Indiana, Bobby Knight. And
Coach
I can tell you this, too. I mentioned, if I could, and what's coming into the equation, I read all the time. I still love my music. I was a pretty good drummer and sports. You know what's coming into play with this whole college football and everything else is gambling.
Oh, yeah. I know. Well, Mike, thank you. Sorry, we're up against it.
No, that's...
Oh, I'm sorry. We got to go. We don't have control over this break at the top of the hour. The gambling aspect, you got to think about it with home field. That's for sure.
West Point was a good pull.
That is definitely true. West Point should be on that list.